All right. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the September 25 meeting of the State Coastal Conservancy. My name is Doug Bosco, and I chair the Conservancy Board. And I would like to take this opportunity to introduce the other members of our board and staff who are here today, and some of whom are on Zoom. On my far right is Jeremiah Hallisey. Mr. Hallisey is an appointee of the governor. And on my immediate right is Madeline Cavallari, who is representing the State Coastal Commission. And by virtue of that, she sits on our board. Welcome, Madeline. On my immediate left is Brian Cash. Brian is one of our longstanding members, and he represents the Secretary for Resources. Also, I am happy that we have Assemblymember Greg Hart with us. Assemblymember Hart, welcome. And anytime that you have comments that you'd like to make, we're certainly welcome to, you're certainly welcome to make them, and we're happy to have you join us. I'd also like to recognize Kara Woodruff, who has been with us so many times over the years. Kara is Senator Laird's representative, and as I say, has participated many times with us on our board. Attending on Zoom is Joy Sterling, who is a public member.
She isn't here today.
Okay. And Mars Gutierrez Groudon is a public member and vice chair of our conservancy. Welcome, Mars.
Thank you.
Also, I'd like to introduce Amy Hutzel, our executive officer. Amy's sitting here with Amy Roach, our general counsel, and Paul Johnson, our board clerk. Did I forget anyone? I hope not. Good. All right, Amy, would you please share some logistical information before we get started?
Great, thank you. So we're meeting today at the Elihu M. Harris State Building in Oakland, and we've planned for a hybrid meeting so that members of the public are able to watch and participate remotely. If you're attending in person and you want to speak on any item on the agenda, please fill out a speaker card there outside the door and pass that along to Paul Johnson, the board clerk, who will pass it to Chair Bosco. And this includes grantees and partners. And on that form, please indicate which item you want to speak on. You have two options for watching the meeting remotely, the webcast and Zoom. If you want to speak on an item, you need to be on Zoom. If you don't plan to speak, you can watch the meeting on the webcast. If you're currently on the webcast and you want to speak on an item, go to the Conservancy website at scc.ca.gov, click on Meetings and Notices, and register to speak. You will be emailed a Zoom link. On Zoom, you use the raise hand button or you press star 9 on your phone to speak at the appropriate time on the agenda. We will call on people and move them over to the panelist screen to make their comments. That takes a little time, and you'll see a circle on your screen. So give it a minute or so. You need to unmute yourself to speak. We cannot unmute you. Spanish translation is available for the meeting if you join by Zoom. There is a globe icon at the bottom of the Zoom screen, and you can choose Spanish or English. And that's it. Return to you, Chair Bosco.
Thank you, Amy. Our next item of business is approval of the minutes of our last meeting. Oh, yes. Could we? We haven't taken an official roll call. Would you please call the roll?
Ms. Cavallari?
Here.
Mr. Cash?
Here.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudich?
Here.
Ms. Perrault? Mr. Hallisey? Ms. Sterling? Chair Bosco?
Here.
All right, quorum is present.
Okay, thank you, Paul. All right, next item is the approval of the minutes. Does anyone have any additions or corrections to the minutes of our last meeting on April 17th, 2025?
Move approval.
Okay, Mr. Cash moves and Ms. Cavala and Mr. Hallisey seconds the approval of the minutes. Paul, will you please call the roll?
Ms. Cavallari?
Yes.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudich?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
The minutes are approved.
Thank you. Next, we go on to item three, which are consent items. These are matters that of less than $500,000 or continuations of previously approved conservancy projects. Are there any public comments on the consent calendar items?
We have no public comment.
All right, are there any board members that would like to remove any item on the consent calendar? If not, Ms. Cavallari, do you want to move approval?
I'll move for approval.
Okay, Mr. Hallisey. Okay, second. Paul, will you please call the roll?
Ms. Cavallari?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudich?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Consent items are approved.
Okay. We're going to have to slow down this agenda or we're going to be out of here in about 10 minutes. Oh, you can do that right now. Okay. We'll have the executive officer's report now. Amy Hutzel will do that.
Great. Thank you, Chair Bosco. First up, I want to propose the 2026 board meeting dates, and we've planned those to avoid Coastal Commission meetings as well as some other meetings. We also propose returning to 5 meetings next year. We did 4 this year. In the past, we have typically done 5 or 6, and I think with Prop 4, which I'll talk about in a moment, it would be good to go back to the 5 meetings a year. I do propose changing 3 of the meetings from the memo. We heard from Department of Finance, and 3 of the meetings that we had proposed were a conflict for them. So we've gone back and forth with them on dates. So the new proposed dates, as of 35 minutes ago, February 19th in Oakland, April 23rd, that remains the same, somewhere on the South Coast, June 18th in Sacramento, September 17th on the North Coast, and then December 3rd, that remains the same, in Oakland. And we anticipate...
What was the North Coast?
The North Coast was September 17th. And then we anticipate doing tours on the day before the April 23rd meeting on the South Coast and the day before the September 17th meeting on the North Coast. So those are all Thursdays. None of them conflict with the Coastal Commission.
Good.
Yeah. So that's an action item.
All right. Mr. Cash, do you want to move? We approve that.
Move approval.
All right. Ms. Cavallari.
Second.
Second. Okay. Paul, will you call the roll?
Ms. Cavallari.
Aye.
Mr. Cash.
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudich.
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
All right, the schedule is approved for 2026.
Thank you.
That was terrific. Thank you. Next up is item 4B. It's an informational item just to update everyone on the Prop 4 climate bond appropriations. We've discussed the overall Prop 4 funding for the Coastal Conservancy at our February and April meetings this year. I just wanted to update you on the FY 25-26 appropriations. So in total in Prop 4 in the climate bond, the Conservancy is slated for approximately $950 million over the life of the bond. For FY 25-26, the legislature recently did a budget bill junior with Prop 4 amounts. I believe it's on the governor's desk at this point. Brian's nodding.
It was signed yesterday.
Oh, yay. Okay, great. I have no opinion on that, but it's terrific. these are the numbers. And the amounts total for the Coastal Conservancy, $267 million for FY 25-26.
What's that number again?
$267 million. I wrote 262 here, but I'm remembering 267. We'll figure that out. So those break down into several different programs that most of the programs are within, they were already programs within Prop 4. So $30.9 million for wildfire, and that was prior to this budget bill junior. That was early action funding. But $30.9 million for wildfire, $54 million for coastal resilience. And that's really our broadest program in Prop 4. Coastal resilience encompasses much of what the Coastal Conservancy can do in our enabling legislation and strategic plan. Within the Coastal Resilience Program, there were two specific call-outs, $3 million for native oyster restoration and $5 million for steelhead restoration. So those were not in Prop 4, but those are species that we do a lot of projects to support, and it should be fairly straightforward to use those funds for our projects. $40 million was appropriated for the San Francisco Bay Area Conservancy Program and San Francisco Bay Restoration. $32.835 million for coastal and combined flood management. So that's really focused on, obviously, flooding, coastal flooding, sea level rise projects. $20 million was specifically for Matilaha Dam. $5.5 million specifically for Potter Valley Fish Passage. And $8.5 million for dam removal broadly. So those three funds, 20, 5.5, and 8.5, are all coming out of the dam removal program in Prop 4, which totaled $75 million. There's $10 million for Santa Ana River out of the Santa Ana River program, and $3 million for Coyote Valley out of the Coyote Valley program. And then we received an additional $50 million for the Great Redwood Trail, and that came from a different section of Prop 4 for trail work. So that it was not in Prop 4 specifically for the Coastal Conservancy. So that's in addition to the $950 million that I had referenced earlier. So that is where things stand. We're just, eventually the funds will show up in our tab run to get into the administrative details, and then we will start moving forward with Prop 4 projects coming to the board.
So how much is unallocated in the sense that we would still have available to disperse ourselves from our board?
The whole $267 million would need to come to the board in terms of.
But any of the rest of it wouldn't, the projects you just listed, those don't come to our board.
No, they would come to the board.
Oh, they all do.
Grant has to come to the board, even the ones that are like Coyote Valley, Santa Ana River, Potter Valley, even those specific. All grants come to the board, and we would have to describe what exactly is being funded, CEQA findings, et cetera.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there may be any number of projects within each of those categories.
Exactly.
So that amounts to really quite a bit of work that we would be doing, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We're going to be busy.
Do you mind if we ask questions as we go? Does anyone have any questions about this? Okay. I guess I'm the only one in the dark, as usual, but thank you. Go ahead then, Amy.
Well, that was it with Prop 4. So, yeah, if there are any questions about our Prop 4 funding. Or if either of the oversight members have any questions, you're welcome to as well.
And then the balance of Prop 4 we'll deal with after this fiscal year.
Right. We have a rollout plan for Prop 4 that we've provided to Resources Agency, and it's really a fairly lengthy rollout plan. The $267 million was more than what we had in the rollout plan and more than what was in the governor's budget. So I'm not sure how that affects the rollout plan, but it seems like it'll speed up our appropriations of funding over the whole life of the bond.
Compared historically, where does this amount land in terms of our board?
I would say the amount we were slated for in Prop 4 is the largest amount we've ever received in a bond, the $950 million. We did just, you know, the past 4 years have been slightly different than most of my career at the Conservancy, where we have had bonds. The past 4 years has really been general fund based on the governor's climate package. And that was, unprecedented amount of money. It also was kind of up and down in terms of us getting the money and then money being reverted. So it was the roller coaster ride. This is a steadier, I don't know what Walt Disney ride this could be compared to, but it's going to be a steadier ride. But it is, this is a large amount of money for us. Yes.
Yeah, we've had the Pirates ride, the teacups. We've had them all.
There's
been many years where we hardly had anything to talk about, but this is a lot of work that we'll be doing. Okay. There's someone that wants to speak.
Oh, Kara.
Oh, Kara. Go ahead, Kara.
Good morning. I just wanted to say congratulations. This is a really fantastic budget result, and I really believe it's a reflection of great amount of faith in this organization and the leadership and the staff and the board. So just really excited to see what lies ahead with this great opportunity, and thanks for everyone who made it happen.
Well, thank you, Kara, and your boss certainly has contributed a lot to that over many years. Many years. All right.
Great. So I also wanted to note that Evan Sloan, our deputy executive officer, and I will be in Washington, D.C. September 29th through October 1st for meetings with federal agency staff and congressional offices to discuss our federally supported projects and coastal zone management funding. So
Well, I hope you'll be safe while you're there.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I hope so, too. I hope we have positive conversations. And then finally, item 4C will be presented by Taylor Samuelson, and she's going to give the board a preview of our plans for our 50th anniversary next year. It's both the Coastal Commission and the Coastal Conservancy are turning 50. So we're going to celebrate.
That's right. Thank you. Could I have the slide deck up for 4C? Thank you very much. Am I good on the mic? Oh. Chair Bosco, members of the board, thank you for having me here this morning. I'm Taylor Samuelson. I'm the Public Information Officer for the Coastal Conservancy, and I'm here to present some of our ideas for celebrating our 50th anniversary next year. So next slide, please. 2026 marks the 50th anniversary of the creation of our agency through the California State Coastal Conservancy Act. And throughout next year, we want to celebrate our agency and define the impact that we've had over the last 50 years and look ahead to the next 50 years. So we're planning an outreach effort, concentrating on the start of the year because we think people's attention in the back half of the year will be focused on the elections. So throughout these outreach efforts, we want to reinforce public trust, strengthen partnerships, and secure continued support for California's coastal resources. Next slide. We're already working with graphic designers on a logo and a strap line for this year. This version that we just mocked up says 50 years of restoring our coast for the future. It's not final, but we want all the elements of this campaign to reflect both the past and how we're going to build upon the progress we've made into the future. And we also hope to have some stickers made of the logo. Next slide, please. So there's a lot to talk about over 50 years of work. We've organized this campaign around three key messages. The first is an overall message that for the last 50 years, the Conservancy has protected, restored, and increased access to the coast, and our work has helped make the coast the treasured public resource that it is today. That our success is rooted in strong collaborative relationships, our partnerships with local communities, tribes, environmental groups, nonprofit agencies, and with Californians, most importantly, who support and cherish our coastal resources. And looking forward, we'll build on the last 50 years to expand coastal outreach, advance equitable access to coastal resources, and implement nature-based solutions for a climate-resilient future. Next slide. There are several objectives for these outreach efforts, including elevating public awareness and appreciation for the Conservancy's unique role and our contributions to the California coast and its communities over the last 50 years. Next slide. We also want to showcase our legacy and impact, highlight our key achievements in coastal protection, habitat restoration, climate adaptation, and public access to demonstrate the long-term positive impact that have come from our work. Next slide. We hope the anniversary will give us an opportunity to strengthen and expand our partnerships and emphasize the importance of working collaboratively to make our project succeed. Next slide.
Oh, Taylor.
Yeah.
Just slow down a little bit for the Spanish translation.
Oh, sorry. Will do. But I'm so nervous. We hope that by showcasing the work of the last 50 years, we'll inspire and encourage continued engagement in coastal protection and climate resilience into the future. Next slide. As I've mentioned, we want to use this as an opportunity to articulate our vision for the future of the coast in the face of sea level rise, catastrophic wildfire, threats to biodiversity, and the urgency to improve equitable access to the coast. Next slide. And of course, we want to celebrate our people, current staff and past staff, our board, previous board members, and our partners that make the agency what it is. And we want to recognize their service and accomplishments. Next slide, please. There are several audiences for this campaign, ranging from the broad category of people living in California and narrowing in on our partner organizations, groups working in the conservation space, elected officials, current former staff and board members, tribes, coastal communities, local governments, and the media as a conduit to many of these audiences and a shaper of public opinion. Next slide, please. So how will we actually deliver on these objectives? Well, and I'm excited to share our plans with you, but even more excited to hear thoughts and ideas from the board. This board has a great deal of experience, and we really do welcome your suggestions and ideas, and also your support and involvement throughout the year. Wait, back one. Thank you. So we thought about how to focus our efforts to reach the most people and have the greatest impact while bearing in mind that we're a relatively small agency and, as
just discussed, much of our staff time next year will be focused on getting Prop 4 funding out the door. So our strategy focuses on four prongs: informational resources that we will develop and distribute, a social media and traditional media outreach campaign, legislative outreach, and staff recognition. Okay, next slide now. Thank you. So we want to create a suite of resources housed on our website that describe our impact over the last 50 years with good messaging, data, case studies that we can translate into a brief printed impact report to share at events and tabling, and share with our partners to disseminate to their audiences. Next slide. We plan on reaching out to traditional media as well as developing a social media campaign and digital assets of our own. So we're starting work with a video company on a series of short videos optimized for social media, focusing on our main priorities, including land conservation and restoration, public access to the coast, climate resilience, and advancing equity. These can be shared on social media channels, but they can also be stitched together to form a longer form video on our overall impact that can be shared with legislators and other stakeholders. Next slide, please. Speaking of legislators, we're already working with the Commission and CNRA on a speaker series event with Secretary Crowfoot at the start of the year to talk about the impact of the Conservancy, the Coastal Act, and the Commission, which are also turning 50. We're talking to the California Ocean Day team about thematically focusing that day on the 50th anniversary of all of those elements, to leverage that day of advocacy where legislators are focused on coastal issues. And I know some of this board have been very involved in that day in the past, so we really welcome the opportunity to talk to you about how we can think about our role in that day. And we're working with the Commission to identify legislators to introduce resolutions to mark the importance of our agencies over the last 50 years. And the fourth prong, which is maybe the most important prong, in the next slide, we want a party. It's another thing we've done well for 50 years. We want to have a lot of fun this year, and we want to bring together our staff and our past staff and our board members and past board members and our partners and friends to really celebrate our agency. And this, you know, could take the form of our classic potluck picnics that we know and love, but we're certainly open to other ideas on just how to enjoy ourselves this year and reflect back on the accomplishments we've had. So that is the end of my presentation. I thank you for your time, and I certainly welcome comments and thoughts now or in slower time.
Anyway. Oh, yeah. So, if you guys have any questions or comments or ideas for Taylor?
Yeah, any comments, questions, ideas for Taylor would be appreciated.
I will contribute the tacos to the party.
Amazing. Thank you.
Well, I'll say this, that I think this will be a time for eloquence and rising above some of the negativity that we seem to be trudging through these days. And I think the public will be ready for it. And we're fortunate to be involved in something that I would guess 95% of the people of our state and probably country believe in. And so let's make the best of it, right? Let's ride this wave and give people something to hope for and dream about, and I think we can do it. So good luck with your planning.
Thank you.
I mean, I thought just this last couple weeks with the Yurok tribe, with this grant of over 100,000 acres, wasn't it?
Yeah.
On the Klamath River?
Yes. There was a land back that the Western Rivers Conservancy did with the Yurok tribe. It was 73 square miles, so I'm not sure what that translates to in acreage, but I believe it more than doubled the size of the Yurok's land holdings, and It's a really important habitat. It's Blue Creek, which flows into the Klamath River, you know, not far from the mouth, and delivers cold water to the Klamath, the lower Klamath. And it was an incredible celebration with the Yurok Tribe, with Western Rivers Conservancy, the Wildlife Conservation Board. And we had contributed to the acquisition, one of the acquisitions that made up the 73 square miles long ago, when Western Rivers acquired the land.
But 73 square miles on a major river, on a major producer of salmon, some steelhead, is an incredible accomplishment. And it's something that every Californian should see,
yes.
You know, because it, talk about 50 years, it'll go on for well past that, you know, and we had a role in that and people should know it. And it's something to be proud of, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's one of the larger projects we've been involved with, but also recently I attended the opening of Ensign Park in Salinas, which is formerly known as Carr Lake, and that was also an incredible celebration of a new park and a community that has limited access to open space and a lot of work by Big Sur Land Trust in the city of Salinas over many years to first acquire the land, which we helped with, and then run this community planning process to determine, you know, what the park would consist of. So, yeah, I mean, the types of projects we're involved with really run a broad gamut. But in terms of public support, we did polling maybe, I don't know, six or seven years ago. And the 95% might be optimistic, but the work that we do and the protection, restoration, access to the California coast, it was up there in the 80s to 90%, you know, support in California. So it's a broadly shared vision.
Oh, great. Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you.
Got a great job ahead of you. All right, Amy, are you?
Yes.
Ready to continue? Are you
finished?
That
concludes the EO report. Thank you.
All right. We will now then go on to the project part of our agenda. Item 5, if I can find it. Okay. This is the City and County of San Francisco Recreation and Park Department, and that will be presented by Linda Tong. Linda?
Good morning, Chair Bosco and members of the board. My name is Linda Tong, and I am presenting on behalf of Erica Johnson, project manager, today. Today, staff recommends $3,091,148 to the City and County of San Francisco Recreation and Parks Department to augment the conservancy grant authorized on February 15, 2024 of $5,500,000 to implement the India Basin Waterfront Park Phase 3 Shoreline Park Redevelopment Project, consisting of the redevelopment of the India Basin Shoreline Park in San Francisco into a mixed-use community park with improved public access and recreational amenities, enhanced habitat, and climate resilience. Next slide. The 5.6-acre property is located along the southeast San Francisco shoreline, next to a body of water known as India Basin. The area was filled in the 1990s to extend the shoreline into India Basin waters and develop the park known today as the India Basin Shoreline Park. The neighborhoods in the area are collectively known as Bayview Hunters Point. Residents bear a disproportionately high level of environmental burden and have strong community advocacy for parks and open spaces. Since 2014, project partners have engaged approximately 30 community groups. A committee of community members developed the Equitable Development Plan. The plan defined community goals for park features and programs. As a result of community partnership and engagement, the proposed project includes an updated 0.17 mile Bay Trail segment that will connect the new 900 Innes Boatyard Park to the PG&E Shoreline Trail that leads to Heron's Head Park, a marine way lawn which will provide passive recreation space and a gentle slope down toward the water's edge to a newly constructed gravel beach, a recreational pier and floating dock that will become a part of the San Francisco Bay Area Water Trail, a boathouse building with restrooms, storage space for kayaks and boat washing areas, and 2.7 acres of native sage scrub gardens, of which about 6% of these gardens will be constructed as bioretention basins to capture and treat stormwater runoff. The updated recreation features will be accessible to people with disabilities. In spring of 2025, SFRPD went to bid for the project. The most cost-effective proposal was approximately $28 million over the estimated budget. Several key factors that likely contributed to these higher costs include increased lumber and steel prices driven by market volatility and supply chain uncertainties, statewide demand for construction resources due to the recent and devastating LA wildfires, and soil surcharging required for unstable fill sediments. The site's existing ground conditions, combined with the extensive grading that's needed, make this process essential for safe construction. SFRPD has raised additional funds and contributed their own bond funds in order to close the funding gap, and deliver the park features and programs promised to the community. Next slide, please. This is an image of the India Basin Shoreline Park groundbreaking event that occurred in late August. Thank you for your time. And with me today is David Froelich from San Francisco Recreation and Parks Department to say a few words.
Thank you, Linda. Good morning, Chair and Conservancy Board members. I'm David Froelich, Project Manager with San Francisco Recreation and Park Department, and I'm the Project Manager for all three phases of the India Basin Waterfront Park projects. First, I want to thank you for considering India Basin Shoreline Park for additional funding to construct the third and final phase of the project, and thank Conservancy staff for their efforts. I also want to thank you for your previous support of our project and funding for that. This funding will go towards the construction of India Basin Shoreline Park that will address public access, sea level rise, and promote biodiversity. That includes constructing buildings above the projected year 2100 high tide level, as well as the installation of bioswales to manage stormwater runoff, the installation of a living shoreline to reduce erosion and support wildlife, and the restoration of nearby wetlands to promote habitat diversity. More importantly, this project is guided by an Equitable Development Plan, as Linda mentioned, or EDP as we refer to it. It's a first for San Francisco. The plan was created with input from the Bayview Hunters Point community and provides an outline for preserving the community's identity by providing economic and social benefits for residents, including workforce development programs, entrepreneurship opportunities, youth programming, and more. I'm available to answer any questions you may have, and thank you again.
Are there any questions?
Brian? Yeah, I just had a question on the First off, looks like a great project, I got to say that. And I think it's amazing that the Conservancy, despite the fact that the cost went up, the Conservancy is only contributing 11% of the cost of the total projects, and that the city was able to go out and to get, it looks like almost $32 million of private funding. We always love to see that, things balancing out. The one question I had is, as you know, there's a lot of turmoil with federal funding going on these days. I just wanted to know the two federal grants, how are we doing? Are they still there? Are we worried?
We have two federal grants, as you just mentioned. One is, I think, for about $3.7 million, and that's from the EPA Water Quality Improvement Fund. We're not worried about that. That is still in place. And the second EPA grant for $2 million, we are working on an agreement with the EPA to accept those funds. They did come back with some stipulations, and our city attorneys are reviewing it, but I think we are pretty confident that we can move forward with securing that funding.
Great to hear.
And just to note, we have about $75 million in private funding for our whole project initiative. This is a $225 million project as a whole. There's three phases, and we're still working to fundraise and try to secure more money so that we can pay back some of our bond funding that we borrowed from.
Love to hear that. That's great. Thanks.
Any other questions? Are there any public comments? Yes. And the winner is? No. Okay, Paul Heineken. Paul, are you out there? Oh, he's here in person. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity, and actually maybe the most important opportunity is to meet Linda and David. I am a lifelong supporter of youth getting on the water. Rowing, kayaking, paddling, sailing, and I am a director of the Treasure Island Sailing Center, which got me in touch with the Conservancy to think about a grant in the future to increase youth access over on Treasure Island. In the process, our initial proposal was declined, and so I went to India Basin to figure out what it would take to be successful. And I was very impressed with what's been done. I'm a huge supporter of the project, but I think it has to be pointed out that India Basin is incredibly shallow, quicksand mud. And a ramp was put down to a float in the Innis 900 Innis site, which is essentially useless. And the nonprofit next door, Rockin' the Boat, which helps kids train in woodworking, local kids, it's part of the whole program to include the community, they make these wonderful little Whitehall rowboats that won't fit down the ramp that's right next to their location because it's too narrow. And they hope to move out to the new location and the boathouse out there and you know, use various forms of trailers to move their boats out there. But even looking at the chart, it doesn't look like the new ramp, as long as it is going to get out to deep enough water to be useful. And so I would just encourage the city to re-review their plans for water access, because to be part of the Bay Trail, it's got to be deep enough even at low tide. And there's not much water out there that is, and just looking at the nautical charts and whatever, the ramp that's on your drawings doesn't get there. So that's my recommendation. Totally in favor of this going forward, but with various adjustments so that it's more functionally useful. And you know, I'd like them to enlist knowledgeable people for waterfront activities going forward. And I hope to be back for Treasure Island joining the Bay Water Trail and better access there in the future also. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Okay, are there any other comments?
There are no public comments online.
All right.
Move approval.
Okay, Mr. Cash moves. Mr. Halsey, do you want a second?
Second.
Approval. Paul, please call the roll.
Ms. Cavalieri.
Aye.
Mr. Cash.
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Grautich.
Aye.
Mr. Halsey.
Aye.
Chair Bosco.
Aye.
Item 5 is approved.
Thanks. Let me mention too, Mr. Heineken, thank you for your comment. We usually don't get involved in too much discussion because, you know, it's beyond us to re-engineer projects or whatever, but hopefully you can talk with the folks that you... Well, we appreciate the work you're doing, too, as well. But. All right. Let's go on now to item 6, is it? The El Cerrito Wildlife Resilience Demonstration Project in Albany, in El Cerrito. And Lily Allen is going to present that.
Hello, Chair Bosco, and members of the board, and members of the public. My name is Lily Allen, and I'm staff at the Conservancy, and I work in wildfire. Today, staff recommends granting $850,000 to the City of Albany to implement the Albany El Cerrito Wildfire Resilience Demonstration Project, consisting of 1, implementing fire fuel vegetation management and ecological restoration, 2, investing in continuing partnerships for workforce development, and 3, demonstrating for public benefit useful practices for eucalyptus milling, native species planting, and fire hazard management. Next slide, please. The project takes place across 2 ecologically and topography significant sites in the East Bay Hills, Quarry Park in El Cerrito, shown here with the yellow star, and Albany Hill. The top photo is taken from Quarry Park, showing Albany Hill. Each location is expected to be 2 to 5 acres large, and both sites are urban adjacent natural areas with steep terrain, recreational trails, and pervasive eucalyptus groves, which are interspersed with native shrubs and oak trees. Albany Hill is also known as an overwintering site for western monarch butterflies and holds cultural significance for the Lisiyan Ohlone people. Current conditions at both sites include dense stands of non-native blue gum eucalyptus trees, invasive understory plants such as broom ivy, which creates significant wildfire risks that are exacerbated by drought and climate change. Public access exists via trails with adjacent residential areas, increasing the urgency for vegetation management. Both sites are owned and managed by the city in which they are located. Next slide, please. The City of Albany will serve as the project manager, including coordination with El Cerrito to develop work plans, engage in contractors, and disperse funds to the City of El Cerrito as needed. In the City of Albany, the project includes the removal of 25 to 50 dead or dying eucalyptus trees, stump treatment, and establishment of a pilot monarch habitat restoration planting zone in accordance with the Albany Hill Forest Management and Habitat Restoration Plan. Next slide, please. In El Cerrito, the project includes the removal of up to 190 unhealthy trees, including eucalyptus and invasive pine, from Quarry Hill, followed by invasive shrub removal and a native plant restoration program. Next slide, please. The cities will each host 1 to 2 community work days, inviting the public to join work parties and learn about native plant communities, the hazards of eucalyptus trees, and how to consider natural areas as holistic ecosystems. These efforts will increase community investment, build relationships between city staff and residents, and raise awareness about sustainable forestry and fire resilience practices. One of the barriers to addressing wildfire risk in eucalyptus forests has been the community's positive sentiment towards the trees. educating the communities on wildfire risks and ecological harm eucalyptus trees cause will create a better social environment for further action. Next slide, please. Last, but very much not least, a key component of this project is to mill eucalyptus on site. Eucalyptus is often thought of as a junk wood with no value. In a previous Conservancy-funded project, the City of Albany milled eucalyptus on Albany Hill and successfully used the milled wood on site. Eucalyptus is exceptionally dense, hard wood that twists, making it more difficult to mill. However, through this project, previous project, the City of Albany demonstrated that it has a few excellent uses, such as retaining walls, stairs, and trunk-sized benches. This project builds and expands on that work by increasing milling to another city and to the community. Both cities will host milling demonstrations on site that will consist of demonstrating the milling process for eucalyptus, educating attendees about sources and uses of milled wood and its ecological benefits, and showcasing projects in place that have previously utilized reclaimed wood for public amenities, like retaining walls and trail steps. When wood is effectively used for products, it captures the carbon as well as reduces the wildfire risk. Wood is that is of sufficient quality will be made available to residents at no cost for reuse in personal projects or to local schools for garden beds. Eucalyptus is a fast-growing invasive species where appropriate uses have been difficult to find. This community milling project will educate the public on uses of eucalyptus by finding other uses for the wood, such as building planter boxes that would capture the carbon while creating a marketplace for eucalyptus wood. Next slide, please. Thank you, everyone, for your time and consideration. With me today are staff from both cities. They would like to say a few words about the project, and we're here to answer any questions.
Good morning, board members, chair. Thank you for having us. My name is Devorah Zoderer from the City of Albany. I'm joined today by our fire chief, Jim Boydo, remotely, and by Albany's Natural Areas Coordinator Margot Cunningham, Senior Program Manager Karina Sampkian from the City of El Cerrito, and El Cerrito Battalion Chief Chase Beckman, also remotely. So thank you very much for having us, and thank you, Lily, for that great summary of our project. We are absolutely delighted to have this opportunity to partner both Albany with El Cerrito and to partner again with the Coastal Conservancy. We had a very successful planning effort in partnership with Conservancy staff and funded very generously by the Conservancy to perform this really placemaking effort on Albany Hill and in the Hillside Natural Area. I won't speak to much of the technical details. We're happy to answer questions, but I'll just share that it has been a real joy to be able to develop this project to highlight strategic plan goals or to hit strategic plan goals, both that we have locally and in alignment with the Conservancy in terms of habitat restoration, in managing the wildfire safety issues that come with non-native eucalyptus forest, to engage with our community on investing in actions towards climate change and towards reclaimed wood, and to really investing in these natural areas that we have in our own communities. Lily briefly touched on our goals towards workforce development. An additional part of this project in Albany is to continue our very strong partnership with local nonprofit Urban Tilth, who provide vegetation management services and work very closely with our staff to continue to steward these lands for people to use safely. We also were very lucky and fortunate in our previous grant funds awarded by the Conservancy to be able to seed fund a habitat restoration internship program. And they have had a lot of success in producing materials for education, a wildlife and for both flora and fauna guide on our to local populations on our hill that is now available And more than anything, the development of local youth as people who are invested in our local natural areas and who also will take those skills with them into their careers has been very meaningful to us. So we're just very grateful for the support. It has been a frankly delightful effort to work through the different elements of this project together. And this is one step in the continued implementation of the planning efforts that the Conservancy has enabled us to perform. So we have much more work to do than is encompassed in this plan, but this plan has really moved the needle for both of our cities on the work we need to do to make these areas safer, more accessible, and more connected to the people who live in our communities. So thank you. And we are happy to take any questions or talk about details of the projects.
Could I ask, when you remove the eucalyptus, are you replacing it with any other type of tree?
Absolutely. I'll ask Margot, who's our natural areas coordinator, to comment. Thank you.
Yes, we have a plan, the Albany Hill Forest Management and Habitat Restoration Plan. And the plan is to, so we divided the hill into different areas where we're going to do work removing eucalyptus, not all at once, but in stages. And where the monarchs overwinter, the plan is to not remove eucalyptus right away because they depend on the eucalyptus, the monarchs. So the idea is to plant different kinds of trees. We have four species that we're going to plant in different areas. And with this funding, we would be able to plant some trial trees initially to see how they do on the hill and which are best for the monarchs.
Do you know what species those trees would be?
Or? Yes, they're Catalina ironwood, Eucalyptus diversicolor, which although it's a eucalyptus, it's not the same as the blue gum eucalyptus. It's more drought tolerant. It's more adapted to the soils on Albany Hill. We also have Canary Island pine and one more, which I'm blanking on right now. But yeah, we have four different species that we're going to try out.
Because we had butterfly protection somewhere else, I remember, where we were protecting the eucalyptus, I think. I forget where it was. Was it?
Yeah, well, the eucalyptus, the blue gum eucalyptus on Albany Hill are not doing well. They're diseased and they're growing too close together. So they're not going to make it, they're not going to be around forever for the monarch. So that's why we're planting trees for the future habitat for the monarchs. And we worked with a well-known monarch biologist, Dr. Stuart Weiss. He helped us on this plan and he's worked on many other restoration plans for monarchs up and down the coast.
So I assume that if they're not doing well, they're more of a fire hazard.
Definitely.
So you'll be replacing them with other trees.
Yeah, trees that are not as much of a fire hazard, actually a lot less of a fire hazard.
Okay. But the butterflies, you'll still be having one eye toward keeping them.
Definitely. Yes, this is a very careful, cautious plan. And that's why we had Stuart Weiss work with us. He wanted to make sure that we had a big enough area, that we had buffer zones for the monarch habitat, and not to do too much actually vegetation management within the monarch zone also, because they depend on lower levels of vegetation as well for windbreaks and for the amount of sunlight that they require for their overwintering.
Do you use herbicides?
No, the city of Albany does not use herbicides.
Okay, are there any questions?
I just had a comment. I really appreciate, great project, and I really appreciate the multi-benefit aspect to this project. The fact that you're bringing in the community, you're training youth, I might imagine, on how to use chainsaws. So that could lead to a career in working in forestry. We need foresters. We need forest workers now more than ever with all the work we're doing in the forest. So I just wanted to put that out there, that I really appreciate that. Thanks.
Thank you. That was very...
I'll echo that.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I'll echo that. I think it's a fabulous multi-purpose, checks off so many boxes. As someone that lived in the area, I'm very excited about seeing this. And Chair Bosco, I think on the other site that you might be thinking of is the fabulous Pacific Grove Grove Sanctuary, Monarch Sanctuary, which is about to be peak monarch butterfly season time.
Yeah, I think we've given money to them.
Yeah.
Good.
I'll just respond and say thank you very much. That was very important to us in developing this project. We know that the Coastal Conservancy strategic plan explicitly highlights workforce development, and in general, it's very important to us that we're connecting with our community, not just as people who are receiving services, but people who are engaged, people who may grow into positions like ours, people who may grow into nonprofit areas, who may become stewards of our lands in their own rights. So that's quite important to us.
Maybe we could get the insurance companies to send a letter to each one of their insureds saying, thanks to the California Coastal Conservancy, we are reducing your insurance payments. Yeah. That might be asking for too much, I guess. All right, are there any public comments? No? All right, Madeline, do you want to move we approve this?
I'll move to approve.
Jerry?
Second.
Okay. Paul, will you call the roll?
Ms. Cavalieri?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudinch?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye. Okay, item 6 is approved. Good work.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you, Lily. And now Lily will do item 7, which is Santa Clara County Fire Safe Council.
Great. Hello, Chair Bosco again, and members of the board and members of the public. I'm Lily Allen, staff at the Conservancy for Wildfire. Today, staff recommends granting $400,000 to the Santa Clara County Fire Safe Council for their community wildfire prevention plan, in transforming their community wildfire prevention plan into a regional prioritization plan and to establish a prescribed burn association in Santa Clara County. Next slide, please. Santa Clara County Fire Safe Council is currently implementing a two-phase forest health project and is planning a third phase along with a long-term strategic plan with their partners funded by CAL FIRE. This three-phase forest health project involves treating between 800 and 1,800 acres of forested Los Gatos Creek watershed in the Santa Cruz Mountains. The Los Gatos Creek watershed was chosen as the focus for the South Bay Prescribed Burn Association activities because of the existing collaboration between land managers and the previous work done. Separately, the Santa Clara Fire Safe Council is finishing a community wildfire prevention plan, which is a great foundation for a countywide regional prioritization plan. The Fire Safe Council will work closely with neighboring regional prioritization plan developers to further cross-county coordination and interjurisdictional project development. Wildfires do not stop at the county board boundary, and this project ensures that coordination won't either. Next slide, please. This is a wonderful opportunity to build on past CAL FIRE funding to use prescribed fire as maintenance. Shown here is the forest thinning work done at the Los Gatos Creek watershed under Santa Clara County Fire Safe Council's previous grant, which is now ready for prescribed fire. Applying fire while training the community achieves multiple benefits at once. Next slide, please. Prescribed burn associations are community-based mutual aid networks to support the safe use of prescribed burns. There are over 27 prescribed burn associations in California where community members and organizations help each other implement burns by providing labor, equipment, and skills. In Santa Clara County, the use of prescribed fire and land management has been limited. The goals of the project are to teach the use of prescribed fire and incorporate it as a long-term forest health management tool, primarily in the Los Gatos Creek watershed. Next slide, please. The project will include trainings, purchasing necessary equipment, and conducting public outreach and education. Santa Clara County Fire Safe Council will provide tools and PPE so that South Bay PBA, Prescribed Burn Association, members can safely participate in burns. Education can include everything from hands-on workshops for pile burning techniques to classroom sessions about navigating the permit process for private landowner burning and smoke management. The project will include a series of small burns as part of initial trainings. These treatments are strategically placed to reduce the risk of catastrophic wildfire while recreating a more resilient fire-adapted ecosystem. Next slide, please. The grant will also be used by the Fire Safe Council to purchase advanced wildfire resiliency technologies such as BurnBot, N5 Sensors Wildfire Smoke Sensor Technology, and UC San Diego's BurnBot Pro 3D technology for burn planning and safety. The Fire Safe Council will make these technologies available to its partners in prescribed burn planning, burn safety, active smoke management, and monitoring. Next slide, please. Lastly, a smaller portion of this funding focuses on adapting the Fire Safe Council's recently updated Community Wildfire Prevention Plan into a regional prioritization plan. The Community Wildfire Prevention Plan is a countywide planning tool rooted in facilitated collaboration among local, state, and federal officers, as well as non-governmental stakeholders and private citizens. The Community Wildfire Prevention Plan identifies potential areas where mitigation measures are needed to protect places from wildfire from the irreplaceable life, property, and critical infrastructure within the county. This planning tool meets many, but not all, requirements for a regional priority plan. The largest gap between the plan is fleshing out project prioritization. Some funding for this project will allow the Fire Safe Council to work with State Coastal Conservancy staff to fill gaps between the Community Wildfire Prevention Plan and the Regional Prioritization Plan. Creating a Regional Prioritization Plan will contribute to the development of a pipeline of vegetation management projects that will increase wildfire resiliency in California's forests, grasslands, and natural lands and reduce fire to communities. It is called out in the state's Regional Forest Fire Capacity Program. Next slide. Thank you, everyone, for your time and consideration. With me today is Seth Chalette, the CEO of the Santa Clara Fire Safe Council. He has a few slides he'd like to share. He's online.
Next slide, please. Excuse me, can you hear me?
Yes, just give us 1 second.
Sure. I wasn't sure if you wanted me to share or not. By the way, congratulations on the first 50, and here's to the next 50. Again, thank you, Lily, for that introduction, and good morning, Chairman Bosco and fellow Conservancy Board members. Again, my name is Seth Chalette, and I just wanted to give you a real thumbnail overview of our PBA and regional prioritization plan framework that we've worked on closely with the Conservancy. And so next slide, please. Obviously, our mission is to manage and protect the people of Santa Clara County, their homes, communities, and environment from wildfires. But we all know over the last couple of years that protection includes a variety of things that maybe a generation ago we didn't think of, like smoke impacts, not just smoke impacts from wildfires within Santa Clara County, but from regional wildfires where smoke travels as well. So this is our core mission, and the PBA is a natural extension of what we've been doing for the last 22 years. Next slide, please. Currently, the Santa Clara County Fire Safe Council leads the largest fuels reduction and forest health programs throughout Santa Clara County. As Lee alluded to, over the last 4 years, we've received two grants from CAL FIRE totaling $15 million to manage about 2,000 acres of what we call forest health treatments. This is a combination of wildfire risk mitigation, but also treating the forest health for resiliency. Obviously, we all know that there has been some challenges with sudden oak death, and other pathogens. And so we're clearing the landscape and making room for a healthy landscape. And this will be part of the area where we introduce some of our prescribed burns in the future. In addition, we are managing a number of fuels reduction projects along the Mount Madonna Summit area, not far from the Lick Observatory, and the several other projects that you also see on the slide here. As Lily had mentioned, for the last 3+ years, we've been leading the update of the Community Wildfire Protection Plan, and we have great engagement and great adoption. And this will be a standard capability to allow us to bring in the regional prioritization plan programming and utilize the strengths of the CWPPP. Lastly, we have a pretty unique partnership with NASA Ames, where with NASA Ames, we have created the opportunity to target embers. I think we all know that embers can be quite destructive. Just think back to January of this year. It really wasn't as much as a wildfire, but really an ember shower. And we've developed some technology where we can target the embers most likely to throw off high intensity, high heat embers that can travel for a couple of miles and ignite. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later, but that will be a target for our prescribed burning. Next slide, please. So one of the outgrowths of our two forest health grant projects from CAL FIRE is we are in the process of completing the West Santa Clara Landscape Resilience Project. We started out at about 105,000 acres. We are now up to 143,000 acres and a few dozen partners, private and public landowners. It's hard to see the graph here, but most of them are listed. And not all of the 143,000 acres will be for prescribed fire, but there's a good portion of this that all the CEQA will be completed in March of 2026. So this gives us a well of projects well into the future to introduce good fire and prescribed fire and do training in the community. Next slide, please. Just a brief listing of some of our partners. All of the folks that you see here on this slide, we have had multi-year relationships and effective partnerships. We've done numerous fuel reduction, large-scale fuel breaks, and forest health treatments with all of these partners. And they're all part of our coalition that'll be part of the prescribed fire PBA that we're seeking funding for today. Next slide, please. One of the things that we focused on is obviously, as was mentioned, I think there are 27 PBAs in the state today, and it's a growing movement. You may be familiar with Lanya Quinn Davidson. She's among the foremost researchers on prescribed prescribed burn associations, and she came out with a real terrific study just a number of months ago. Well, we've engaged Lanya. We've brought her in to present to our board and to present to potential PBA members to understand the PBA, how to manage and how to start up and engage a PBA effectively. And this will be a guiding document for us as we start it up. Next slide, please. Also, fire is safe. Of course, we hear about the fire that escapes, right? Good news doesn't tend to get the coverage on the nightly news, but certainly when something goes wrong, we know about those prescribed fires, but clearly it's less than 1%. And when we engage prescribed fire, we've got a very experienced team on our staff today, are people that are certified burn bosses that lead prescribed fire trainings for the Coastal Conservancy. On our staff is Amanda Brenner Cannon, who's on the Zoom here with me today. She has managed prescribed burn associations. So we've got a deep well of expertise from the fire agencies, as well as non-fire public entities in prescribed fire. Next slide, please. Our ultimate goal of the PBA is to both incorporate evidence-based science. So we actually sit right in the middle of both Stanford University and San Jose State, and we're not too far away from UC Berkeley. We have deep relationships with many of the researchers, particularly their forest ecology and prescribed fire researchers. So we intend to target our PBA and work closely with each of those universities to conduct soil studies and other type of studies so that we can show the efficacy of prescribed fire, show the smoke risk reduction of prescribed fire. And obviously that'll be part of the evidence case that we're building, but also in our area, there are three tribes, the Olean, the Amamutsin and the Tamiya Nation, and we seek to work with them on cultural burning and help them to educate the public on cultural burning practices. Next slide, please. That is it for me. Amanda is also here, but I am here to take any questions from the board and or public. Thank you.
That's it. Thank you.
All right. Are there any questions? No? Are there any public comments?
We have no raised hands online.
No? All right. Well, thank you, Seth, for your comments, too. Very interesting.
You're welcome. And thanks to your staff. I'd be remiss if I didn't thank Lily and Costa Villanos, who have been great to engage over the last year and a half. So thank them both.
Good. All right. Who'd like to move approval of this? Madeline?
I'll move to approve.
Okay. I'll second.
Who said that?
Marcela.
Okay, Marcy seconded. Paul, will you call the roll?
Yes. Ms. Cavalieri?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudinch?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey? Aye. Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 7 is approved.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Lily.
Thank you.
All right. We'll go on now to item 8, which is the Central Coast and Watsonville, the City of Watsonville, final design and permit applications for 0.5 miles second phase of the Lee Road Trail project, right? And Aaron Gravely will present that.
She'll Hi, everyone. Can people hear me all right? I'm online.
There you are, Aaron. Welcome.
Here I am. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Good morning, Chair Bosco and members of the board. My name is Aaron Gravely, and I will be presenting the Lee Road Phase 2 Trail Planning Project. Staff recommends the Conservancy authorize a $1,068,300 grant to the City of Watsonville to prepare final designs and permit applications for the second phase of the Lee Road Trail Project. This phase is a 0.5 mile segment of the Lee Road Trail that includes a pedestrian and bicycle bridge over Struve Slough. Next slide. The City of Watsonville is home to the Watsonville Slough System, a series of six interlinked freshwater sloughs at the southern end of Santa Cruz County. The system is one of the largest remaining freshwater marshlands in the state's coastal zone, lying just adjacent to the developed portion of Watsonville and providing access to natural space for residents and visitors. Next slide. In the past, Lee Road provided a connection from central Watsonville to the area west of Highway 1 and north of Struve Slough. Next slide. But due to hydrologic changes in the slough system in the past few decades, Lee Road is now permanently submerged, and there is no longer a direct connection from central Watsonville to this area, which also includes Pajaro Valley High School. Next slide. The City of Watsonville, in conjunction with the community and local partners, has developed the Lee Road Trail Project to address this lack of connectivity. The vision is for a multi-use trail from central Watsonville across Struve Slough and north to Pajaro Valley High School. Along the way, the trail will connect to Watsonville Slough Farms, a 490-acre mix of agricultural lands and wetland and upland habitat that the Conservancy helped protect. The Land Trust of Santa Cruz County is developing 5 miles of public access trails through Watsonville Slough Farm and also envisions a free community U-Pick garden. Next slide. The Lee Road Trail Project is divided into three phases organized by trail segment. Phase one is the northernmost segment of the trail, beginning on Harkins Slough Road by Pajaro Valley High School and concluding at the entrance of Watsonville Slough Farm. Phase one is slated to be constructed in 2026 and will be paid for by the City of Watsonville. Phase two is the segment of trail that is the subject of this presentation. It starts at Watsonville Slough Farm and continues southeast along Lee Road in on an easement over California Department of Fish and Wildlife Reserve lands before crossing the flooded Struve Slough and concluding one block south on Lee Road. Phase three will connect the trail into central Watsonville, where users can further travel along city roads or the city's 9-mile Watsonville Slough trails. It will conclude at the site of the future Monterey Bay Scenic Trail Network Rail Trail, which once built will connect into the California Coastal Trail. Next slide. Phase two will include a bicycle and pedestrian bridge across Struve Slough on roughly the same alignment as the submerged portion of Lee Road. The bridge will be designed so that it can also accommodate emergency vehicles. This phase of the Lee Road Trail project is the piece necessary to providing pedestrian and bicycle access from central Watsonville to the destinations north of Struve Slough, including the Pajaro Valley High School. Next slide. Conservancy funding would go towards completion of the 100% design plans for the phase two segment of the trail, additional needed geotechnical site testing for the bridge components, and preparation and submission of permit applications for the remaining permits and permit extensions needed for construction. It will additionally pay for schematic and final designs for the mitigation necessary to offset the environmental impacts of the Lee Road Trail project, most notably the construction of the bridge included in phase two. Finally, there will be a community engagement process to envision and design the art that will be displayed on the side of the Struve Slough Bridge visible from Highway 1. Next slide. That concludes my presentation. Ida Herrera, Project Manager for the City of Watsonville Public Works and Utilities Department, is in the room and I believe has some remarks prepared for the board. And then we will both be available to answer any questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Can you hear me? Okay. Good morning, Chair Bosco and members of the board. My name is Etta Herrera, project manager, City of Watsonville, and I've been a project, I'm a retired civil engineer, but I came back to work part-time, so this is like a nice project to work on. And I'm thankful for the City of Watsonville to give me that opportunity. Thank you, Aaron, for your summary of the project. The Lee Road Trail project has been a decade in the making. And what has the city done thus far? Well, we've completed the environmental planning and all permits are secured. Phase one, as mentioned, of the project is currently out to bid and we should begin construction next year. That is fully funded. All the right-of-way access has been acquired for both phase one and phase two. This project has attracted many stakeholders, and I'm gonna just mention a few. The Office of Congressman Jimmy Panetta, who is funding, helping us with the funding of the construction and maintenance of this project. The County of Santa Cruz, who will be contributing to the maintenance of the trail, the cleaning up of the trail in the future. The Land Trust of Santa Cruz County, who has secured some funding for the design of phase one and also is a enthusiastic helper with planning for the future for this project. The Watsonville Wetlands Watch, they're a group, a nonprofit group who tirelessly help with the restoration of native plants in the city of Watsonville along the slough areas. And they work with the youth. They work with the high school students at Pajaro Valley High School. And they also are enthusiastic in helping with the maintenance of this future project. One unique aspect of this Lee Road Trail project is that the city had to acquire a trail easement from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. And so that has been secured. But what the organization wanted us to promise them is that we provide a stewardship program for the youth relating to conservation so that it will make an impact to the youth. I mean, the high school is right there, is yards away from this project. So, and then the Watsonville Watch, Wetlands Watch organization is in the high school. So I think there's gonna be a lot of opportunity for exposing these kids to that. And I would say 80% of them are
Mexican-American or of Latin descent.
A lot of wildlife on that bridge.
We promised the California Department of Fish and Wildlife that we will dutifully maintain this trail, and we have already put in line with the help of the Land Trust of Santa Cruz County how we're going to do that, and the County of Santa Cruz Parks is also helping us. And I wanted to express that because it's important not just to build it, but to have it pristine and say, hey, this is important to us. So. Lastly, I wanted to thank the Conservancy for, and Erin and her predecessor, Tom Gadsbury, for supporting this project for so long and for helping us secure the funds for the environmental process. And thank you for considering the request of $1,068,300 for the Lee Road Trail project, supporting sustainability, equitable and equitability for the travel of this area. Thank you.
All right. Are there any board comments? Are there any public comments?
Kara has her hand raised.
Oh, Kara, go ahead.
Hi again, everyone. Senator Laird has submitted a support letter on behalf of this project. And I just wanted to mention it's just has so many positive attributes as we've heard this morning. But one of the most exciting parts is that we're reaching out to underserved communities and giving that access to not only this trail, but some 9 miles of a trail network and beyond. So I think it's really wonderful for the community of Watsonville. And I think you'll see that all the letters that were submitted were in support. So all around, want to urge your support. And then going back a little bit in the agenda, I just wanted to mention, I'm sure Senator Laird would be really enthusiastic about supporting the 50th anniversary of the Coastal Conservancy. So please do reach out and let's coordinate on that. And thanks to you all.
Great. All right.
Marcy also has her hand.
Oh, Marcy, would
yes.
you like? Okay, go ahead.
This is a fabulous project. I think that it's extremely important to have this place be a welcoming place, that it is conserved, that it is welcoming, that it is, like they mentioned, the population around there doesn't necessarily. I think it's very important that this is a place that is as spectacular as other places in the coast. So I am very excited about this and this work going forward, especially with the folks that live around there. So congratulations.
Well, would you like to move approval of it then?
I would delightfully love to move approval for that, please.
All right, Mr. Cash, do you want a second? Are there any other comments?
We have no public comment.
Brian, will you call the roll then?
Ms. Cavalieri?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Mr. Hollacy?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 8 is approved.
All right, great.
Thank you.
Good project. Thank you, Erin. All right, we'll go on now to item 9, and Michael Bowen will present that, $500,000 for the Mid-Klamath Watershed. Michael, welcome. That's a nice tie.
Good morning. Chair Bosco, distinguished members of the board. I'm here today to seek your authorization to disperse $500,000 to the Mid-Klamath Watershed Council to implement the Upper Horse Creek Channel Restoration Project in Siskiyou County. Due to concern over the brevity of this meeting, I've prepared an extremely long presentation for you that includes a full-length motion picture. Prepare yourself.
Let's start with that.
So the bustling metropolis of Hamburg in Siskiyou County is far from the coast, and you may wonder what's wrong with the channel they already have on Horse Creek. So before delving too much into the project details, I'd like to provide some local context. Next slide, please. The Klamath is an enormous watershed, and it's received a lot of well-deserved attention recently for the removal of 4 dams. This is historic, but this is not what we're here to discuss today. We're going to try to explore, among other things, how the Klamath River fisheries survived both the installation and the removal of those dams. Next slide, please. We heard about Blue Creek earlier, truly an historic acquisition and land back project, one of the most pristine and really magical tributaries to the Klamath River. This is Upper Horse Creek, which is farther upriver, and is one of those sanctuaries that enabled the fisheries of the Klamath to survive for so many years. Remember, the dams were in place for 100 years, and the fisheries persisted throughout that entire period, and they survived the removal and the massive movement of sediment downstream as well in places like this. So what's wrong with this picture? Well, Horse Creek, as you can sort of see here, was pushed to one side of the valley, straightened, narrowed, leaving a very high-velocity channel that fish could enter, but sometimes spawn unsuccessfully in due to the conditions there and just the lack of suitable habitat. How did this happen? Next slide, please. So this 1944 aerial provides a clue. In the center, slightly to the right, are the telltale signs of a Yuba dredge. What is a Yuba dredge? Again, more context. Next slide, please. So for my generation, the Gold Rush was always presented as sort of a magical era in California history, a quaint period in which enterprising and fun-loving Argonauts sought their fortunes along the rivers and streams of California foothills. Of course, it was more complicated than that. Next slide, please. For one thing, the Gold Rush was preceded and followed by a extensive genocide of California's Native American populations, and it was an activity that was supported at the highest level of state government. Next slide, please. For another,
the reality of the Gold Rush was quite different. Hand in glove with the genocidal violence characterizing that period of our history lay a well-capitalized, well-organized infrastructure.
Oh, okay. Maybe. Thanks. Apologies.
Just when it was getting good, too.
For another thing, the lone miner was quickly supplanted by well-organized and well-capitalized industry. And as you can see in the lower right, this is the type of activity that occurred throughout the Klamath River watershed. Massive dredges, digging up well into the historic river channels, sifting the gravels, looking for what little bit of gold they could find on a massive industrial scale. And thanks to the Siskiyou Historical Society and some brilliant research some years ago by the California Department of Parks and Resource Agency, we have a demonstration of this. So if you could play the film, please. Exactly. It's only 3 hours.
This is one of the largest machines you will ever see. It's larger than a football field, and it floats. You will probably never see it in actual operation because, like the giant mechanical dinosaur it is, Its era is ending. This is the Yuba number 12, a gold dredge, one of the disappearing phenomena in the great search for gold. Number 20 is the largest and deepest digging gold dredge operating today. Nearly 4,000 tons of machinery for the specific purpose of picking up the tiny grains of gold that lay hidden in the ancient river bottoms on the floor of the Sacramento Valley in California. The gold dredge is a complete floating processing plant, and its process is simple. It digs, it separates, and it collects the gold it finds beneath the surface of its self-made pond. The action of a gold dredge starts with its buckets, 135 of them, connected as an endless chain, riding on a giant structure called the bucket ladder. The buckets dig in the ancient riverbeds, 125 feet below the present water level, drag their loads of mud and stone to the top of the dredge, dump them, and go back down for more. Each bucket weighs 2 tons when it's empty and can carry 2/3 of a cubic yard of gravel, in which there may only be a few specks of gold worth no more than 7 to 12 cents. The high steel superstructure on the bow of a gold dredge is called the gantry. Its job is to suspend the pulleys through which the many operating cables roll as they raise and lower the bucket ladder in the water. High above the bucket line of the dredge is the pilot house, where the winchman manipulates the movements of the dredge. He must literally read what's happening on the bottom of the pond from what breaks the surface in the giant buckets. The dredge is now digging at 117 feet, which means that the buckets are working 14 stories below the surface. Since the dredge eats up 18 cubic yards of river gravel a minute, it is constantly in motion, pushing into fresh ground. Its most noticeable movement is a huge 300-foot arc that the bow makes while the stern remains fixed. And since the dredge has no propellers to move it, the winchman pulls the dredge along with cables that are fastened to the shore. Although the entire dredge floats, it simultaneously stands and walks on the floor of its pond on two enormous 70-foot steel columns.
Thank you so much, and thanks for your patience. Hopefully that gave you a flavor of what the Klamath River and many other rivers in California experienced up until fairly recently.
Well, did they get any gold?
That's the sequel.
What are you? How much are you going to ask for that?
So next slide, please.
God, that's incredible.
It is apparent on the ground.
Oh, I'm sorry for that. So this
the after effects.
Prior occlusion, if you could just cut the sound from now. So the after effects of dredge mining usually take the form of disconnected floodplains, extensive mine tailings, heavily abraded channels, mostly devoid of vegetation, and in general, just inhospitable moonscapes that really aren't suitable for life. But it doesn't have to be this way. Next slide, please. Thanks to many, but in this case, the Mid-Klamath Watershed Council, the Karuk Tribe, and others, working with these legacy challenges, we have really enterprising, inventive, innovative work with process-based, not form-based, but process-based restoration, in which the proponents try to take this landscape and change it back to the forms and processes to which the salmon and steelhead and beavers and all these other species that have depended on these landscapes can thrive in. And so with recapturing the floodplain by removing levees to allow the creek or river to meander, restoring depth through the installation of off-channel ponds and resting pools that intercept cool groundwater that enable the fish and other species to survive even during the hottest periods of the summer, and by adding wood and resting spaces. That allows some return to at least a semblance of how these rivers and streams functioned over the millennia. This wasn't always easy to achieve. Despite the sort of activities that occurred until quite recently, permitting some of these projects was quite difficult, and I think it was considered risky. There was concern, for example, that fish would be stranded in the ponds after they were built, and so forth. Fortunately, next slide, please. Local knowledge and tribal wisdom prevailed, and since this pond on Horse Creek was constructed, more than 500 juvenile coho salmon, not to mention steelhead, Pacific giant salamander, and many other species have called this single pond home each year. I know because I've seen it. I got to dive it in a dry suit in a snowstorm, and I can tell you it was one of the most magical sights of my life, seeing that return and nature filling that vacuum. Next slide, please. So in a slightly less attractive format is what is planned for the project. It will be 4.9 acres, nearly half a mile of restored channel habitat, in which the creek is allowed to return to its floodplain. New channels will be excavated in order to reduce the velocities in the main channel and to provide more hospitable habitat in the creek. And there will be about 34,000 cubic yards of material moved that will be taken to a nearby quarry where it can be reused for construction or other purposes. And then some of the finer material that's suitable for spawning gravel will be returned from the quarry to the site in order to provide suitable spawning habitat within this restored channel reach. And so next slide, please. So I'd like to give a big shout out to the Mid-Klamath Watershed Council and their innovative friends and their furry helpers who have really enabled these streams to begin coming back, to begin producing the salmon and steelhead and other species for which this basin is so famous and so loved. I'd also note there was a discussion of the federal funding component earlier. The Mid-Klamath Watershed Council really squeaked through with a bipartisan infrastructure law grant that was pushed through the Bureau of Reclamation, and they're using this as match to implement this project. And we're really proud of them for securing that at the last minute and bringing that to the ground here in the state of California to do this good work. And that concludes my presentation. Available for any questions.
Are there any questions? Are there any public comments?
We have no public comment.
Well, Michael, as always, your presentations are very poignant and really beautiful. It's extremely educational, too. Do I hear a motion that we approve this?
I'll move to approve.
Ms. Cavallari moves. Mr. Hallisey seconds. We approve item 9. Paul, will you please call the roll?
Ms. Cavallari?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Grodinch?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 9 is approved.
Well, thank you very much, Michael. Great job.
Thank you all.
Terrific. All right, we'll go on now to item 10, which is a variety of projects. And Irvin Tang and Katya Biener will present that. Katya, have you done this before?
I have not.
You haven't?
No.
Well, there's not hardly anybody here to welcome you doing this. Are you nervous? Probably, huh?
A little bit.
A little bit is all. That's it. Yep. We'll have to think of some good questions for you then, if you're only a little nervous. Well, go ahead.
All right. Good afternoon, Chairman Bosco and members of the board. My name is Irvin Tang, a project manager and a member of the Explore the Coast Committee. I am joined by Katia Biener, one of our 2025 Sea Grant Fellows. Today, we will be presenting 13 projects for your consideration as part of the Explore the Coast, or ETC, grant program. Next slide, please. Right. The staff recommendation and selection of the recommended project has been a collaborative effort of many people in the Explore the Coast Committee and Advisory Board. Next slide, please. Today, staff recommends a disbursement of $966,316 to fund 13 nonprofit organizations to run projects that facilitate and enhance the public's opportunities to explore the California coast. For this round, project partners will leverage approximately $2.9 million in matching funds. We also received 26 letters of support for the projects we are recommending today. On the right, we have a photo from an event hosted by Color the Water, one of the organizations we are recommended for funding. Now I will pass it to Katia, who will tell you more about the Explore the Coast grant program.
Thank you. Next slide, please. The Conservancy aims to increase access to the coast for ETC priority communities. These communities include lower-income families, people with disabilities, people of color, indigenous people, and others facing barriers to accessing and enjoying the coast. This program is based on the belief that visiting the beach and the coast can bring people joy, healing, and can organically inspire stewardship. The program has served tens of thousands of Californians, many of whom visited the coast for the first time through an ETC grant. Next slide, please. Staff aims to equitably distribute ETC grant funding and better serve priority communities. To better achieve these goals, the Conservancy staff created an advisory board for the program in 2019. Today, our board consists of 11 members pictured here. The board provides input on the application process, application review, and ongoing management of the grant program. Next slide, please. This year, we had a competitive grant round where we received 123 applications. After staff review of applications, a subset was sent to the advisory board for review. After multiple meetings to discuss the applications, the advisory board and staff selected 13 projects to be recommended for funding. On the right, we have photos from an event hosted by the California Health Collaborative and Santa Cruz Hub for Sustainable Living, which are two of the organizations that we are recommending funding for today. In this presentation, we will showcase four example projects selected. Next slide. Land Paths. In the North Coast, this organization will provide 2,460 participants from Sonoma County, youth and their family, primarily Latinx and BIPOC, with coastal field trips and six multi-day coastal camping experiences focused on science, cultural relevance, and environmental stewardship. Blue Dot Education. This inland Southern California program will provide 1,000 Imperial Valley residents with two types of coastal day trips, beach trips and tide pool explorations in San Diego, as well as two community events to celebrate and share experiences through photography, science, and storytelling. Now I'll pass it back to Irvin.
Okay, next slide, please. Okay, here we have Amamutsin Land Trust. This multi-regional program will provide 60 Amamutsin tribal band youth and their families with a seven-day summer camp experience on ancestral coastal land, fostering cultural revitalization, community connection, and ocean stewardship. Then we have New Fire Yangwishi Hotel. This multi-region program will provide 90 participants from tribal and BIPOC communities with four coastal experiences each, including harbor tours, tide pooling, and multi-day camping to promote healing, cultural learning, and leadership. Next slide. We have a member from our advisory board here with us today who would like to offer some commentary on her experience and support for the Explore the Coast grant program. please welcome Andrea Sanchez-Davidson.
Hi, everyone. Good afternoon. Thanks for having me. So my name is Andrea Sanchez-Davidson, and I'm honored to serve as an advisory board member for the California State Coastal Conservancy's Explore the Coast Grant Program. I grew up in the San Fernando Valley, less than an hour, depending on traffic, from the stunning beaches of Malibu, Santa Monica, and Topanga. I was lucky to have a dad who not only had the time and the means to take those drives, but who also understood the value of connecting with nature. One of the most formative experiences of my childhood was a fifth grade trip to Catalina Island. Snorkeling there opened my eyes, both literally and figuratively, to the vibrant underwater world that has stayed with me ever since. That early exposure to the ocean sparked a lifelong passion for environmental stewardship. I studied environmental policy as an undergrad, and in 2019 went back to school to pursue a master's in marine biodiversity and conservation at UC San Diego. Today, I'm fortunate to work at Resources Legacy Fund, where I focus on watershed health, environmental justice, and expanding equitable access to the California coast. So today, I want to share how the Explore the Coast program is transforming lives by expanding access to the coastline. As an advisory board member, I help guide the grant-making process to ensure it remains equity-centered and community-informed. This includes reviewing application guidelines and the applications themselves with an eye toward inclusion, impact, and joy. I commend the staff at the Conservancy for their openness to incorporating new feedback into the process and for really being a model across the state for accessible, transparent grant making. Being an advisory board member also allows me to advocate for organizations doing transformative work like those in the Surf Justice Collective. For those that may not know, the Surf Justice Collective, or SJC, is a statewide coalition of surf and ocean-centered nonprofits working to dismantle systemic barriers to ocean access and surfing. Its members include Salted Roots, Outdoor Outreach, Un Mar de Colores, Queer Surf, Black Dot Surfers, and Black Surf Santa Cruz, many of which are current and past ETC grant recipients. The impact of Explore the Coast on SJC members and orgs like them is profound. It enables first-time ocean experiences for youth and families. It fosters leadership and mentorship within marginalized communities. It strengthens community bonds through shared joy and healing. Literally gives me goosebumps to talk about the work that they do. These leaders are not only reclaiming access to the ocean, they're actively cultivating the next generation of environmental stewards. Through culturally relevant surf programs, ocean education, and community building events, they're helping young people see themselves as protectors of the coast. Whether it's teaching marine ecology through surf lessons or honoring Indigenous relationships to the sea, SJC members and those like them are weaving environmental justice into every wave they ride. Together, ETC and SJC are not just expanding access, they're reshaping the narrative of who belongs at the beach and in the lineup. I'm proud to be a part of a program that doesn't just fund projects, it fuels movements. Explore the Coast Grants and the Surf Justice Collective are proving that when we invest in equity, we unlock the full potential of our coastline for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Andrea. Next slide, please. So here are a few pictures from a few of the organizations we are recommended for funding today. Thank you for listening. This concludes our presentation. We are happy to take any questions you may have.
Well, are there any questions for Katya or Irvin?
Yeah, for Katya. I was just wondering, I'm the money guy at the agency, so I'm always focused on that. It looks like there's a 3-to-1 match with all between the 966,000 we're giving out and the amount of the projects. Just wondering if any of those are federal funds and if those are in question right now or.
We have different funding sources. A lot of our funding comes from the ELPF license plate funds. I don't believe we have any federal funds that we are concerned about at this time.
Great, thanks.
That was good answer. Probably just as well that we don't have any federal funds in this project. Oh, Marcy?
Yes, I love this whole lineup. Great work for all of them. I do want to highlight that a couple months ago, I had the chance to come and speak to Un Mar de Colores Generación C, which is a bi-national program that they run for 15 to 18 year olds. And I don't know if this is part of that, but just to illustrate the greater work that they do with the San Diego, with what we call the Cali Baja region. And as you have mentioned, Chair, earlier today, at a time when we're looking for those building bridges and looking for those high grounds, et cetera, it's exciting to see programs like this and programs like all of the ones that are run by these organizations. So I'm hoping we will all enthusiastically support, and I would love to move for approval.
Good. Any other questions? Are there any public comments?
We have no public comment.
Well, thank you both for a very good presentation and a good project. Madeline, would you like to move?
Mars moved.
Oh, Marcy, would you like to move approval? All right.
I'd like to move.
Marcy's moving approval of item 10. And Madeline, you want to second?
Yep.
All right. Paul, would you like to call the roll?
Ms. Cavalieri?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Grodinch?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey? Aye. Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 10 is approved.
Thank you. You know, I, to this day, every once in a while, I'll run into someone who will say, you gave me a tour of the Capitol when I was in grade school. You know, and I thought, well, first of all, I thought, boy, that makes me feel old. But it's sometimes amazing with young people how the slightest exposure to something they remember all of their life, you know. And that's what you guys do, you know. Like they go out on a boat trip that they otherwise would never have any opportunity to do can lead to any number of experiences later on in their lives. So good work.
Thank you.
All right. I guess that's it for the projects. Now we go on to the Conservancy member comments. Are there any general comments, any exhortations or?
I would like to say that in the current state of things, which we all are keenly aware of, it is exciting, and it's exciting and very exhilarating to see this work happening all up and down the state, to hear about the projects like the Land Back project that was just celebrated, and it is truly a balm to see this work happening throughout California. So congratulations to staff and all the grantees and the folks doing this work every day.
Absolutely. Any other comments? No? Well, then I'm going to adjourn this meeting. Our next meeting is, when is it? Are there any comments on non-agenda items?
We have one hand raised.
All right. Who's that?
Italia, go ahead.
Good morning, board members. My name is Italia Salvaje, and I'm with the Bayona Wetlands Land Trust. I first became interested in the Bayona Wetlands when I learned that Bayona is one of the last remaining coastal wetlands in Los Angeles County. And the immense ecological and cultural value it holds. I began volunteering for field trips and leading nature walks. I started my position with the Land Trust this summer, and I've been getting caught up on the complicated history of this special place. It seems that there has been some shared frustration and heartache for many decades over this truly amazing natural resource. The Land Trust brought me on board, and we're hoping to start a new chapter at Bayona that focuses on collaboration, communication, community involvement, and a continued focus on tribal engagement and traditional ecological knowledge. I was interested to learn that it was the Coastal Conservancy that played a critical role in working with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife to open gates into Area A of the Bayona Wetlands back in January 2022. That's actually where the Land Trust focuses its stewardship efforts. And your efforts increase access, and it's been incredibly positive for the community and the reserve itself. The Land Trust has brought hundreds of young students to the wetlands for the first time, and mostly from underserved areas. And I wanted to let you know how impactful that access has been. We have also been working with the Department of Fish and Wildlife to conduct habitat stewardship events and making room for native wetland plants by removing invasive weeds. With the upcoming rains, we expect that invasive seed banks will be exhausted, and this will allow for native species. And yeah, I just wanted to introduce myself. So thank you for listening to me. If you want to contact me, I'm italia@bayona.org. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Italia. All right, are there any other comments?
We have no other public comment.
Well, that concludes our agenda. First of all, let me ask our counsel, Amy Roach, do we need a closed session?
No.
No, all right. Our next meeting will be November 20th, 2025, here in Oakland again, and that's it for now. Thank you all, and safe passage.